The Voices Dot Earth podcast series is brought to you by the Dot Earth Domain. In each episode, we shine a light on organizations and individuals who are part of the growing Dot Earth tribe, as well as those outside of our tribe who are all making our planet a better place. In this Voices Dot Earth podcast interview, we are speaking with Tim Oliver, who's the co-founder and commercial and marketing director at Wanderlands.Earth, which is an organization that works with businesses and individuals across the UK to assess their carbon footprint and create sustainable offset solutions. And Tim, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Matt. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, likewise, likewise. And if you don't mind, let's start at the top. Tell us about Wanderlands, the organization's history, mission, and all that good stuff.
Okay, mate. Yeah, absolute pleasure. I think where's the best place to start, really, is probably a little bit about myself. I come from a county in the UK called Somerset, which is in the southwest of the UK. So it's very nature-driven, agricultural-driven county. Although my career actually spent most of the time in financial services, and particularly I was out in the Far East, India, Japan, Taiwan, Hong Kong for most of my career. And I actually was spent vast majority of that within, you know, leading large international organizations in their marketing function, etc. And part of that, especially in the latter years, was in relation to ESG, environmental, social, and governance aspects. So, you know, I naturally have a natural passion from where I've come from, but also, you know, that transfers into my corporate life. And I think probably, Matt, the most notable event which happened is a couple of years ago, part of a major marketing campaign which we ran out of Hong Kong was to take a group of runners to the North Pole up in the Arctic Circle to run a marathon. And I set that up so it would all be carbon neutral in terms of, you know, door to the ice and back again, because what I really wanted to do was to be able to demonstrate the impacts of what climate change was having on the Arctic Circle. I'd never been there before, but, you know, I'd read and studied it. And we took a group of celebrities from Hong Kong and other parts of Asia to go there. And whilst we were there, what you actually do is that you go to a place called Svalbard, which is in right at the top of Norway and just on the edge of the Arctic Circle. And you use that as a staging post before you fly out to the pole to run the marathon. And whilst we were there, we were doing some filming of the participants. And you've got to have a guide with you just outside the town there. It's a very small town, maybe 1,200 people, Matt. And, you know, because the polar bears tend to drift into the town. And whilst we were there, I was talking to the guide and said it's just, you know, unbelievable in terms of, you know, the beauty of the place. You know, it was all my, I suppose I would describe it as you see in the film Narnia. It was just unbelievable. And whilst we were there talking, he said, yeah, you see what you're looking at now, which was water. And he said, I can tell you 15 years ago, that was ice. And I was absolutely staggered. I said, I just couldn't believe it. And he said, you can't believe the pace that it's receding. And I think at that point then, I thought, goodness me, you know, not only do I want to wish to be a supporter, actually, I want to try and do something. And then I reflected and decided that I wanted to finish after 30 years in corporate life and set up the business of Wanderlands. And there's certain components of Wanderlands which I set out to make it different. But in essence, we set out to provide natural solutions, predominantly through growing native broadleaf trees and also creation of biodiversity to allow companies to offset their carbon footprint through natural solutions. So we started it in 2020. And so far, really pleased, Matt.
That's awesome. What a great firsthand look at the impact of climate change. And I don't think many people have had that opportunity. You know, on a separate note, outside of the script, I went down to Mexico, you know, the Mayan Riviera, kind of south of Cancun, and we've been going there for 20 years. And I saw it firsthand where like beaches in front of the place where we usually stay have grown from 20 feet to about 2 feet in certain areas. And there's also, and this is kind of separate, just plastic on the beaches and stuff. It's really kind of shocking when you see it firsthand. Wouldn't you agree?
It is, mate. It's, you just cannot believe just the amount of plastic which we use as a global population. It is absolutely staggering, and, you know, and the amount of plastic which was only single use. And quite honestly, Matt, you know, there's no need for it. It's just, we'd have to change our behavior. And, you know, we have all of us become spoiled. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm a paragon of virtue. I was, you know, I've jumped on thousands of planes in my life and I've drunk, you know, Coke out of a plastic bottle. But you got to sit back now and start thinking you're at the 11th hour. And where you can save the planet, quite frankly, is just to a large extent, thinking about what we do and changing our daily lives, not being so expectation of having things immediately, still have them, but in a different way of securing them. And actually, we can then make a huge difference.
Yeah, big time. I think you hit the nail on the head. And let's shift back a little bit. So obviously, your solutions are for UK businesses. And it sounds like the upcoming autumn 2021 climate bill is kind of a tipping point or a motivator for your organization. And would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, that the climate bill coming in and refer to it in the UK as the environmental bill, which will probably get royal assent in the last quarter, and then it will become the Environmental Act. And that will bring in notable changes and requirements. And probably one of the biggest changes which will come as a result is that businesses of all sizes will, over a period of time, and when I say a period of time, Matt, I'm talking, you know, typically there's usually a window of, you know, 24, 36 months to allow businesses to get them their houses in order. But in essence, after that period, whether it's 24 or 36, but certainly no more, then businesses will have to submit a part of their accounts and their returns to the revenue. Well, in your case, in the US, the IRS, but in our case, Inland Revenue, you'll have to return what your carbon footprint is from your business. And then you will have to then submit a plan to move to carbon neutrality as stage one. And then obviously the ultimate is to then move to stage two, which will be carbon net zero. So I think, you know, that is a major, major shift. Another big example would be for development. Now, be that for residential or commercial or industrial development, any developer who is developing buildings has to replace 110% of the biodiversity which they are destroying. So if I give you a quick example, let's say that, you know, you had an acre of ground and you were going to put on there, let's say 10 houses, you know, as a result of putting those houses up, that ground is now devoid of biodiversity, and biodiversity does not come through having a lawn for obvious reasons, right? I mean, your lawn's normally treated, you're normally cutting it, etc. So you don't create biodiversity that way. So what will happen is a builder then, in order to get permission to build, will have to then submit a plan to say, we have assessed that site, and on that site, there are, for an example, 10 biodiversity units or habitat units. And those habitat units are made up of what is the flora, you know, what is the fauna on the site? So, you know, what is the ecosystem? And that is assessed by a chartered ecologist. And they will say, looking at the factors involved on that 1 acre site are 10 units. So that means the developer then has to replace, you know, 11 units. So where do they go to get that 11 units? They would actually come to Wonderlands, and Wonderlands would say, yes, we have units available because we've identified land which we have secured, okay, with the landowner. You then have to buy those units off Wonderlands, which in turn is buying them off the landowner. And then as a result, they will then be permitted to get their planning permission. So that today is not a requirement, Matt. But when the environmental bill comes in, that is a massive change. Because as we all know, housing economy is usually a great barometer of the overall economic position of a country. It's such a big driver for all the reasons we know. So that has a massive material impact going forward. And I think it's fabulous because you're then reinstating 110% of what's being damaged or destroyed through the development. And then at the same time, asking every businesses, large and small, to first of all, understand their footprint. And then secondly, to be able to have a plan to get to carbon neutrality before they get to carbon neutral, I think is absolutely massive. So they are huge changes, and changes which have to happen.
Yeah, big time. That's great. I appreciate that rundown there. So it sounds like in many ways, your solutions are kind of in process or will be put into place. But let's dive in a little bit further and tell us about your solutions for individuals and businesses.
Okay, I think the way we work with, I'll start with businesses first, Matt. The way we work with businesses to, first of all, understand their footprint. And in the UK, and it's pretty globally accepted practices, you know, there are fundamentally three scopes of emissions, greenhouse emissions. You've got scope one, which is the direct emissions which you generate as a result of the products and services which you provide. Scope two is the energy needed to provide and produce those products. And then scope three is really the supply chain which is used to develop those products. So if let's say that you were a bed company, for an example, there is, you know, scope one, the direct greenhouse emissions you create by producing that bed in that factory. Then you go, right, so that's what we need. So the people involved, for an example, what they do, how they consume power, etc. And then you look at scope two, which is then, okay, where is that power generated from? Is it typically still the majority is still fossil-based fuels or nuclear power, etc., versus renewable, but that is shifting. So then you look at that, which is generated. And then you look at scope three, which is then, okay, where does that wood come from? Well, that wood come from Indonesia or it comes from Latin America. So how does what is generated from that supply chain? Well, first of all, there's somebody who actually cuts and fells those trees. Those trees then go through a processing. They are then transported to a port. That port then has a ship to move it to the UK, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that is the supply chain. And it is the supply chain which typically will generate most of your greenhouse gases. So what we will look to do is look with a business and say, we need to assess your scope one, scope two, because quite frankly, you can control those very quickly. Okay, so you do not perhaps have to have a fleet of vehicles which are working every single day. If you change your delivery process for your furniture and you deliver on a Tuesday and a Thursday, as opposed to every day, then actually you'll cut your carbon footprint because your vehicles aren't running. And if you then move them to electric, you'll cut it again. So they are quick wins. So as an example, Matt, you know, I think this is where I come back to my point about changing behavior. We're so used to going to Amazon and saying, thank you, can I have it tomorrow? And if it doesn't turn up, we go, well, what's going on? But the reality is, do we really need it tomorrow? You could have that product delivered 2 days later. And actually, as a result of having a more coordinated delivery pattern, you'll actually cut your footprint. So we as individuals can change our behavior and we can make a big difference. So we will then assess that scope one and scope two, and we will say, these are the strategies you need to put in place. Once you've deployed those strategies, typically you will be left with a situation which is called residue carbon footprint. That residue carbon footprint is one of those things you're just, we all have, right? You and I are having that. We're creating a carbon footprint by having this conversation, Matt, because we're talking to each other through the internet. That's got to be powered by something. So there is an element of carbon always being generated. Okay, so that residue carbon footprint then needs to be offset. Now, the way we do that is plant, you know, native broadleaf trees. And we purposely plant native broadleaf trees because we wish to create the ecosystem which supports those trees. Because without the ecosystem and without the opportunity for the little bugs and the little, you know, insects and the pollinators doing what they do, actually the trees won't survive. So trees in itself do not solve the problem. It's the ecosystem and the biodiversity around the whole infrastructure which solves the problem. So we then, our position at Wonderlands is say, we will, having assessed your footprint, advise you how to reduce it through the things which you can control by changing the behavior of how you run your business. The residue carbon footprint is then offset through natural solutions and where you'll plant new woodland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we then move to say, right, so how now we've got our house in order, how do we now get our supply chain in order? And of course, that takes longer because then you're starting to deal with people who are perhaps in Latin America or Indonesia who are cutting and logging trees. You know, they've got different drivers as to how they wish to address it. So it is a journey. And we always say, get one and two under control. And now let's take the bigger picture. And that's where the global conferences, which will happen. And COP26 is a global conference happening in Glasgow this year in November. That's the time where governments need to come together and say, all our countries need to get their footprint under control. Once you've got that mandate, then you can start addressing scope three. a bit long-winded, Matt, and I'm sorry. Hopefully I kept it quite simple.
No, you did, and it's amazing. Like, you really did kind of map out the issue and what needs to be done. You often don't see that. Like, a lot of people in organizations say, we need to change. We need to do this, X, Y, but we don't really know how to do it. You all are actually, putting feet on the street, if you will, in terms of making this change. And speaking of change, too, tell us about your Crosscomb and Paradise Hill project. I saw that on your website. We'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so we've got we have two sites which we purchased ourselves, and we wanted to do that right from outset to be able to demonstrate to our clients that we are absolutely committed to this, and we've made our own investment of our own money to identify the right sites and actually plant the trees, and create the right biodiversity. So that was a big thing for us to be able to demonstrate our commitment. And both these sites are in the middle of Somerset. They are particularly nice sites. They're high in biodiversity. There's a lot of natural flora, a lot of natural fauna there, which is fabulous, et cetera. And we plant, on Paradise Hill, we planted there quite densely, because when you plant that, in case you don't know, I'll hopefully give you a little bit of guidance on it. But when you plant, you have to obviously look at the soil and the infrastructure of the soil, et cetera, and what trees are best suited for that location. So on Paradise Hill, the top half of the hill, it's about a 4-acre site. The top half of the hill is quite stony. So we know that there's going to be some natural, casualties, et cetera. So we've heavily planted there, knowing we're going to lose about 20-25%. That's just the way nature works. So typically, though, on Crosscomb site, we'll only be planting a density of probably 650, not 900 to an acre. So because we want to then create a lot more space for people to, and that comes down to the name of the company, Wanderlands, i.e. Wanderlands. So you can wander around the sites. So yeah, on Crosscomb, it will be, that's 25 acres there. So there'll be a lot less density planted there. But on Paradise, it is more dense because the ground's a lot stonier and we're going to lose some trees for certain.
Yeah, great. Actually, interesting about your name, Wanderlands, that makes a lot of sense. And your website is wanderlands.earth, and you all are users of the .earth domain, and would love to hear why you chose .earth.
Well, I think that's a pretty good question. I think when we search for the domain, the usual ones of either .co, .uk, .com, etc., and then we came across .earth, and we said, well, absolutely perfect. I mean, it just fits. We're in the category of sustainability through natural solutions. And it's all about protecting the planet, aka the Earth. So what better fit? And then we managed and fortunate enough to secure Wanderlands.earth.
Oh, nice. Yeah, oh, that's great. Excellent. Love hearing that. And so obviously you launched in 2020. You got the big climate bill coming up here in the fall and the autumn. But what's your overall future vision for Wanderlands?
Well, I think when I started, there's key things when I started, Matt. First of all, I wanted it to only be planting native broadleaf trees. Okay, we're not a commercial forestry, and there's nothing wrong with commercial forestry. It's a key part. It produces fabulous product, but we're not a commercial forestry. We're putting trees in, for in perpetuity. So typically, 100 years plus. So if you look at what's being lost in terms of, tree coverage globally is absolutely staggering. So we've got to replace that. So that was one key thing. Another key thing is that anything we do for our clients, I wanted that to be advised by chartered environmentalists or chartered ecologists. So we're only used, professionally qualified people to assess somebody's footprint. I think that's really important. I mean, to your earlier point, Matt, people don't really know what to do. They know they need to do something. And there's nothing better knowing that you've had a professionally qualified person actually give you your recommendations in terms of, the standing of your carbon footprint. I also wanted Wanderlands to be involved with education. So hence that where all our sites would be open to the public to wander around and particularly get people involved, be it local schools, et cetera, because if we don't continue to educate the next generation, then we're going to make the same mistakes, previous generations have made. So, it's all about education. And to that end, I'd like it to be digitalized. So we actually are about to launch an app at the end of quarter two, which will allow anybody who purchases a tree or what we call one of our woods for goods. If you're a corporate client. You know, you can visit that location digitally. You can see how we're maintaining it. You can see how the tree is growing. You'll be able to talk to your tree, and it'd be an educational experience. So, you know, there's a massive component there. So, you know, native broadleaf trees, develop the ecosystem, make sure that any carbon footprint is by professionally qualified people, ensure that, you know, there's good educational engagement there, and we digitalize it and make it fun. So that's what we do. And that's available for both corporate clients as well as individuals.
That's excellent. You know, Tim, really, really appreciate your time here, and congrats and props to you for really making Wanderlands something that can, I mean, address these huge issues that we have going on right now. This has been a fun and very enlightening discussion today. And before we sign off, is there anything else to add or anything we may have missed?
No, all I'd like to say, Matt, is obviously thanks for the opportunity and thanks for your listeners. And I hope they enjoyed the discussion. And, you know, please feel free to visit our website. And the only thing I'd sign off with, you know, Matt, is that every little thing we do, whether it's just deciding that you will not drink out of a plastic bottle, you'll take your own replenishable bottle, it is amazing the impact that will make. So to coin a phrase, every little helps. It really does help. And that's what I just encourage everybody to do.
That's excellent. What a great way to end this Voices Dotter Earth podcast interview with Tim Oliver, who is the co-founder and commercial and marketing director at Wanderlands.Earth, which is an organization that works with both businesses and individuals across the UK to assess their carbon footprint and ultimately create sustainable offset solutions. And Tim, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome, Matt, and all the best to you, mate.
Thank you for listening to this segment. .Earth is a real live internet domain that anyone can use. Listeners can go to our Voices.Earth site to find out what others are doing with their unique .Earth domains. Through Voices.Earth, you can also secure your own .Earth domain name through all major registrars.